Support for UpToDate is provided by Geisinger, providing world-class care for our community, here, where it matters.
Hello and happy Monday. Welcome to UpToDate from WVIA News. I'm Sarah Cinto, here to catch you up on the news you should know about. Today, can an upcoming documentary turn a film flop into a cult classic? Lackawanna County hopes so, especially since they invested $500,000 in the original film. And speaking of movies, I've got some page-to-screen reading recommendations in the latest bookmarks. It's Monday, November 24th. If you bought a frozen turkey for Thanksgiving, this is your first reminder to put it in the fridge to thaw. Let's get you up to date. We'll start off with a story on a national program for hospice patients. Medical students from Geisinger Commonwealth School of Medicine comfort hospice patients while their families are away. The students are part of the No One Dies Alone program. As WVIA's Lydia McFarlane reports, Allied Services hospice centers in Wilkes-Barre and Scranton host a chapter of the national program.
Tommy Allen looked up to his grandfather. The man he called Pap-Pap died alone at 97 in hospice care. The loss of his grandfather encouraged him to volunteer with the No One Dies Alone program. He's now a student representative.
I kind of saw that as a really good way for me to give my time back while in medical school and to kind of be there for families when they do have to step away for dinner and things like that. I to potentially, you know, be there for their loved ones just to provide company and or be there towards the end.
Volunteering has helped Allen's medical education.
That's been important for me before heading to the clinical space and kind of understanding that medicine is not all sunshine and rainbows. There aren't always happy endings, but it's important to recognize and it's okay.
Aubrey McGovern is a second-year student and the program's president. A conversation with a patient made her realize she's on the right path.
He kind of just randomly woke up and looked right at me and asked, "Are you following your dreams?" And that was like really struck me, like really to my heart, because we were talking about life and med school, and I said, "I hope so." And
Lori Fleming is Allied's volunteer coordinator.
A family is very at peace knowing that somebody has sat with them. The staff appreciates that extra support in that room because this way they can attend to maybe another patient that maybe doesn't have family members or that needs more care.
Volunteers are trained in September and are a part of the program through the following December. I'm Lydia McFarlane, WVIA News.
Thanks, Lydia. Find more of that story at WVIA.org. Switching gears to the big screen now, Lackawanna County is betting a documentary filmmaker can transform a failed movie that cost taxpayers $500,000 into a winner. As WVIA's Boris Krauchnyuk reports, the film will focus on the making of The Trouble with Callie.
John Mikulik doesn't like to say The Trouble with Callie is so bad it's good. Mikulik prefers to say famed actor Paul Sorvino's failed film is so over the top it's good. So he's making a documentary about how the movie came to be.
Kind of went for the funny because, you know, it's such an insane story. And so it kind of gets a little farcical.
Lackawanna County wants to help him try. The county invested $500,000 in Sorvino's film flop 2 decades ago. This week, the county commissioners voted to let Mikulik use clips from the movie for free in his documentary. Mikulik is hoping to sell his film to a streaming service. The county is hoping the streamer wants to show The Trouble with Callie 2, and the original turns into a popular cult classic. County General Counsel Don Fredrickson has watched Callie.
I've had the undistinct pleasure of watching the movie twice. The more you watch it, the funnier it gets. It's kind of like a Monty Python type situation. It's so bad that it's funny.
Mikulik sees cult film potential.
So my goal was always like, well, let's see if we can get this film released. And I think if you could create a compelling documentary about it, people are going to want to see the movie then. And that's when you could maybe start developing a following like The Room or these other like really like, you know, fun films that have just, you know, become kind of cult films over the years. And then in that way, the county can maybe make its money back.
I'm Boris Krawchenyuk, WVIA News.
Thanks, Boris. Stay with us. There's more Up to Date after this break.
Hi, I'm Julie Sidoni, Director of Journalism at WVIA. We're inviting you to be part of something truly important, strengthening the future of trusted local journalism in our community. Through our Newsmatch campaign, we're working toward a $125,000 goal by December 31st, with special opportunities available throughout the campaign to help your support go even further. Donate now at wvia.org/match, and thank you.
Welcome back. Now it's time to add to your reading pile. For the latest bookmarks, I wanted to know about your favorite books that have made the leap from page to screen. Here's more. So here's a question. How do you usually feel when you hear that a favorite book is going to become a movie or TV show? In my experience, there's always excitement, but there's a bit of anxiety as well. Will they get it right? Will what I saw in my imagination match what makes it to the screen? What will they change? Some adaptations have flopped and fallen into obscurity, ignored by fans of the source material. But some are held in high regard by readers for accurately capturing and even elevating the stories they fell in love with on the page. For this week's episode, here are a few books that have made a successful leap from page to screen.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Adams, and my recommendation is Where the Crawdads Sing. I think that both the movie and the film adaptation are absolutely amazing. And I particularly like the film. I think it's a great adaptation because not only does it capture the spirit of the book and tell the amazing story, but additionally, it adds on to the source material in great ways and brings these characters to life on the screen. It's one of my favorite adaptations, and I recommend it to anyone.
Hello, I'm Paul Lazar, Director of Radio Programming at WVIA Radio, and my favorite book to film adaptation would most likely be Stephen King's Pet Sematary. Now, the book was published in 1983, and I got my hands on that book at, well, quite an early age, maybe too early an age, which would probably explain a lot, but I was really blown away by the 1989 film, which is probably on my top three list of scariest films ever to be made, and it has a great cast. Of course, you have Fred Gwynn, Herman Munster of the Munsters. You have Denise Crosby of Star Trek The Next Generation in there as well. And some great acting by the kids in the film. And I don't want to spoil anything for you, but poor Gage. My goodness. One quick fact about Pet Sematary, the book that you might not know, is that Scranton does get a call out towards the very end of the novel. So there's a local tie in there. It's perfect for this time of year, the autumn, the fall. We often see that the film adaptation of a book is not necessarily better than the book itself, but I think this is one case where they're on the same level. It's one of my favorite adaptations, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hey everyone, it's your girl Jess, aka the Bathtub Bookworm, and I'm so excited to be back on this week's episode of Bookmarks, where we are talking book-to-screen adaptions. I know that it's crazy to say, but sometimes I do think that the screen adaptions of some books really do get it right. For example, Little Fires Everywhere. I thought the Hulu series really outshined the book. The pacing was tighter, the emotional stakes landed harder, and even the couple of changes that they made from book to screen, I thought were done really, really well and made an absolute ton of sense. And then there are some adaptions that just feel like a gift to the fans. One of those that I am absolutely obsessed with is the Red, White, and Royal Blue movie. I absolutely adored the book. It was a perfect book to me, absolutely no flaws, but getting to watch Alex and Henry's love story play out on screen was pure joy for me. So even though I love the book just as much as the adaption felt like it was made for the fans, and I really, really appreciate that. So whether you're a page-first purist or love-hitting play before chapter one, great stories deserve to live in every format. This is Bookmarks. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Hi everyone, Sarah Cinto here with my recommendation for this week. It's actually 13 recommendations. It's A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket. This series had two chances at a screen adaptation, and I think the second round absolutely nailed it. Lemony Snicket's 13-part Series of Unfortunate Events has always been one of my favorites from childhood. But I wasn't the biggest fan of the 2004 film that tried to squash the first three books into one movie. I always thought Violet, Klaus, and Sunny deserved more time, and I missed the dark whimsy of Lemony Snicket's occasional narration. Then Netflix released its three-season series, and all of that was forgotten. The series gave each book its own multi-episode arc and perfectly captured the dark humor and quirky characters of the books. Neil Patrick Harris is perfect as the devious Count Olaf, and I was absolutely delighted each time Patrick Warburton popped up to deliver Lemony Snicket's dry narration. A Series of Unfortunate Events was a formative read for my baby bookworm self, and I'm glad it finally saw some justice on screen. That's all for this edition of Bookmarks. Join us again on December 5th. I'll be looking for your favorite science fiction reads. Want to talk about a book you loved? Email me at sarahcinto@wvia.org. with bookmarks in the subject line. Okay, one last thing for you today. Let's take a look back at This Week in History with WVIA Director of Journalism, Julie Sidoni.
This Week in History, a brief look at some of the biggest happenings here at home and around the world, November 24th through the 30th. Back in 1896, the U.S. Post Office begins delivering mail on Pennsylvania's first two rural mail routes, both in Westmoreland County, paving the way for the system in place today. Also in the Pittsburgh area, in 1908, this is the week 154 miners die in one of the worst disasters in U.S. mining history. The incident in Marianna, Washington County, leads to the establishment of the U.S. Bureau of Mines 2 years later. In 1963, this is the week Lee Harvey Oswald, the alleged assassin of JFK, is shot to death by Jack Ruby, live on television in the basement of a Dallas police station. And in 2004, this is the week Jeopardy contestant Ken Jennings finally loses after winning 74 straight games and more than $2.5 million. That's This Week in History. I'm Julie Sidoni, WVIA News.
All right, I hope you're feeling up to date and ready to take on the week. Find more stories at WVIA.org. I'm Sarah Cinto. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Remember, if you want to stay in the know, you can subscribe and listen every weekday wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy your Monday, everyone. I'll catch you tomorrow, right here on Up to Date.